ready to keep you company wherever you are. Carte Blanche, the podcast, brings you immersive, hard-hitting stories anytime, anywhere, every week.
It's Monday, it's April Fool's, and we promise that all of today's stories are very, very real. Joining us this week is Daily Maverick journalist Ray Mashlaka. Here's what's coming your way. A private education giant has fallen, leaving devastated students and parents in its wake.
There was really some damning allegations also being made as well. One of them is that the students were being given marks or scored and passed through the system, but the exam papers were never even marked. So it seems like some of the marks that were given to students here were thumb-sucked.
The ANC finds itself between a rock and a hard place as the national speaker faces arrest. Later, we reflect on a few stories that made us question reality, and how an invasive plant is bringing hope to families in the Northern Cape. But first, the illicit cigarette market is booming, and it's costing the country billions. Good morning, Ray. Welcome back to the show. You know I love having you with us. How are you doing?
Good morning, Liz. I'm all good. The first quarter now, or the first quarter's ending. And gosh, it feels like a lot has happened, hey?
It does. It just feels like we should be in December already at the rate things have been going. But let's get into today's show. I want to kick things off with a chat on illicit cigarettes and the real cost to the country over the years. Now, a study from the University of Cape Town was recently published, and it detailed just how much money South Africa has lost as a result of this illicit cigarette market. I mean, some of the figures were just astounding. The study covered a period from 2002 to 2022, and it found that we've lost about 119 billion, yes, that's with a B, billion rands in taxes not being paid on cigarettes. I found it interesting that in part the spike in illicit cigarettes was due to the tobacco ban during the pandemic. But an interesting point made in the paper for me was that the simple act of increasing the tax on cigarettes won't necessarily address the problem. Instead, it's encouraging more individuals to buy these cheap illicit cigarettes. What's the best way to go about this? I know government is pushing for the installation of CCTV cameras and tobacco company warehouses, but I mean, what else can they really do? Because it feels like this is a battle that just can't be won.
Yeah, not so much that the government can do here, Liz. I mean, it seems like the criminal elements or the networks that do supply these illicit cigarettes have flourished and now run slick operations. And it seems like our law enforcement agencies are really struggling to catch up and clamp down the supply of illicit cigarettes. We know that in South Africa, that the increase in taxes or sin tax on cigarette and tobacco products and alcohol doesn't necessarily curb, you know, the consumption of these products. In fact, people tend to spend more money to feed the habit, I guess. But 119 billion rand is a lot of money that the government is losing through the fiscus. I mean, I think it costs about 34 billion rand every year to pay the 350 rand a month of social grant. Now, you know, if we had to recoup this 119 billion rand, it means that the social grant can run for at least 3 or 4 more years. It just shows how much money is being lost and the potential here is lost to fund other initiatives such as paying out social grants. But these criminal networks have become more advanced, and it's going to be really hard for the government to really clamp down on these networks, criminal networks.
And for me, also shockingly, the paper also states that the illicit cigarette sales made up about 58% of the market in 2022. That is a massive loss for us and for the country. In part, the study blames the gutting of SARS as well under the leadership of Tom Moyane as another major contributing factor in the rapid growth of illegal tobacco trade. Do you think, under the watchful eye of SARS Commissioner Edward Kieswetter, that the Revenue Service is perhaps making some inroads in the fight against illicit cigarettes?
SARS under Kieswetter is really trying to re-establish some of the units that were lost at SARS during the Tom Moyane days and the state capture projects that gutted capacity within SARS. So I know that some of the business units within SARS that were responsible for tracking illicit markets, those units are slowly being rebuilt and brought back. But the problem here, Liz, is that SARS has lost some experience through experienced individuals who were handed out throughout the state capture projects. And some of these individuals, you know, brought institutional memory and technical expertise as well to go after these criminal networks. Some of those people have left SARS through really bad experiences. So giving them back will take a long time, and also rebuilding some of those lost capacities to track criminal networks. It's going to take some time to really bring back that capacity back. But it seems like Edward Kiesvitter is really making progress in bringing some of that capacity back. But I mean, to the number you quoted there, it's quite staggering. I mean, illicit cigarettes comprised only 5% of the market in 2009. That number is sitting at about 60% by 2021 or 2022. So rebuilding that capacity is going to take some time. But yeah, Kiesvitter is really making some headway here.
EduCorps has imploded, leaving thousands of students with an uncertain future. This after the Department of Higher Education and Training confirmed the deregistration of four major private colleges. EduCorps, one of the largest private education providers in the country, failed to submit audited financials, with officials calling the EduCorps group dysfunctional. During a press briefing last week, Minister Blade Nzimande detailed the many issues at EduCorps, including its failure to pay staff, resolving numerous student complaints, allegations of corruption and bribery, and irregularities around student exams.
Now, a big story coming out of the higher education sector is, of course, the deregistration of several tertiary institutions under the EduCorps umbrella. The Department of Higher Education and Training announced last week that Damlin City Varsity, Intake, and Lyceum College faced deregistration after EduCorps failed to submit audited financial statements. That was the main reason, but there were, of course, many other reasons. Now, could you explain to us how we ended up in a position where some 13,000 students are now left with an uncertain future?
You know, this is quite a sensitive topic because in the higher education sector of education, there's already a lot of nervousness and concerns around colleges. Every year we see bogus colleges being raided, students spending thousands of rands on bogus colleges only for their qualifications to not be accredited after going through an education program for 3 years. The Department of Higher Education has been investigating EduCorps for quite some time. The investigation ended and the findings of that investigation has now been unveiled. EduCorps, as you said, failed to submit financial statements. There was really some damning allegations also being made as well. One of them is that students were being given marks or scored and passed through the system, but the exam papers were never even marked. So it seems like some of the marks that were given to students here were thumb-sucked. These institutions didn't comply with tax obligations or didn't pay their taxes, allegedly. You know, there was also elements of dysfunctional practices such as bribery and elements of corruption, EduCorps not paying salaries to staff on time. So there was a lot of dishonesty about exam markings. Also, there was some misrepresentation in the number of students that are through the EduCorps school. EduCorps claimed it has about 50,000 students on its books, whereas the number through its colleges was less. So there really is a lot of issues here going on.
EduCorps has been given until October, of course, to appeal the deregistration. But in the meantime, the various colleges will not be allowed to take on any new students. And enrolled students have to be phased out and given the opportunity to complete their programs at alternative public or private institutions. But personally, in my view, I don't think things are going to end well for anyone. Things don't look promising at all. If you just listen to what the Department of Higher Education is saying, last week they said, quote, there is no credible evidence to suggest that the management of EduCore is working to improve or correct some of the serious governance and compliance failures. So it's quite worrying to see that an institution like EduCore is literally crumbling before our eyes, and it seems like they just don't have the capacity or the will maybe to fix things.
At the center of this crisis is students, young students who are seeking an education in a country that has poor education standards, has a high unemployment rate as well. Some of these students are hoping to further their education to secure a job in an already tough labor market, in a market in which even students who graduate from university are struggling to gain an entry point into the labor market. So this is quite a concerning matter. And I'd like to center the students here who probably pay thousands of rands to secure an education and a qualification that they can use to better their lives. But at the end of the day, to go through something like this, it creates a lot of uncertainty. And, you know, if I was a student at some of these institutions, I'd be worried and quite scared about my future in a country which, you know, the odds are already stacked up against me as a young individual trying to craft a career for myself, let alone get an education, quality education, that is.
Yeah, I really hope that the department, along with EduCore, can find a way forward. One student said that her parents paid 70,000 rands to get her into college. They literally threw every single penny they had to get her into college. And now she doesn't know if it's going to pay off, if she's going to get the money back, or what's going to happen. So I really hope we have a positive resolution to this.
National Speaker Nosiviwe Mapisa Ngakula is facing arrest as allegations of bribery mount against her. She says this is all an attempt by the National Prosecuting Authority to, quote, humiliate her. Currently on special leave, this whole debacle has placed the ANC in a very awkward position.
Let's move on to our next big story. And this is, of course, the national speaker that's been under the spotlight. I think the big question that everyone is asking, will she or won't she be arrested following the filing of a sworn statement alleging the national speaker of parliament, Nosiviwe Mapisa Nkakula, accepted bribes for tenders while serving as Minister of Defence. Now, firstly, do you see an arrest on the cards?
Oh, it's quite a difficult one, hey? It comes on the back of a lot of allegations being made, you know, against politicians, them being implicated in corruption and wrongdoing. We haven't really seen any successful prosecutions against politicians who have been implicated in wrongdoing. I'm thinking of state capture here, Liz. Some of those cases have barely moved through the courts. So I'm really skeptical here about that arrest.
And of course, this is a really significant development with the national speaker essentially being fourth in line for the presidency should the president not be available. So, I mean, she's really, really up there. I recall reading an article by Stephen Grotes on Daily Maverick in which he says, quote, never before in SA has someone at this level of government faced arrest, end quote. How on earth, and this is my big question, how on earth does the ANC resolve this matter?
It's quite a tough issue because I think the ANC is under pressure to see for it to act decisively against its members who might be implicated in corruption. There is the ANC step aside rule whereby if you are facing charges or allegations of wrongdoing, then you have an obligation to step aside. If you are prosecuted, then you know it also creates another process in which you have to step aside. But this is quite an important matter. Nosiviwe Mapisa Nkakula, as you know, Speaker of the National Assembly, she has quite a powerful position. She is head of one of the three branches of government, the legislature, which is parliament, then there's the executive and the judiciary, but she falls into the legislature, part of three branches of government, which is a very powerful position to hold. So never before we've been here. And I think this will be quite a litmus test for democracy and accountability. The nation is really baying for accountability among powerful individuals who are implicated in corruption to be prosecuted or face some form of comeuppance, because I think, you know, the nation wants to see the law moving decisively, especially towards powerful people who are implicated in corruption. But the ANC really has a hot political potato on its hands here in dealing with this matter. But it's going to be interesting to see how the ANC gets around it and how our law enforcement agencies also get around this matter.
The South African news cycle is wild, and the roller coaster of crazy headlines has left most of us exhausted. It therefore comes as no surprise that most publications steer clear of the April Fool's trend, because, quite frankly, no made-up story could beat the real-life events we are exposed to week after week.
On to our green shoots, and I want to start the green shoots a little bit differently because, of course, it's April Fool's. You know, the running joke every year is that we cancel April Fool's in this country because every day is a joke. But I kind of want to touch on that and kind of look at where some stories have really left us scratching our heads, because sometimes we do come across events that really make us question reality. For me, it has to be the September 2019 incident when Minister of Mineral Resources, Gwede Mantashe, punted a non-existent mineral at an Australian mining conference. I'm not sure how you pronounce the mineral, but it was something like hazanil or something like that. But he proudly said, oh, we are one of the biggest producers of this mineral. And it was entirely fake. Then there was, of course, also the infamous 22 million rand flagpole that also you read that and you thought, is this a joke? Are we serious? But Ray, I want to know from you, what story or stories stand out for you as one that sounds just too ridiculous to be true?
Oh my gosh. I mean, you know, it's quite hard to compete with those two that you've come up with. But I'm still scarred by the Nganja fire pool situation that happened many years ago.
Yes.
But there was also a demonstration as well about why this fire pool was necessary or needed to be installed at former President Jacob Zuma's home. Nathi Nhleko, the former cabinet minister, sweating bullets during a media press briefing defending why Mr. Zuma needed a fire pool. And when we saw the pictures of that pool, it was an ordinary pool. So I'm still very much scarred by the whole Gundla upgrades and the fire pool demonstration, which Phile Mbalula said the other day, it wasn't a necessary spend on Mr. Zuma's home. So the Gundla days and the state capture period for me had many moments of it being an April Fool's kind of moment.
Definitely. There was no shortage of those. And of course, we invite all of our listeners to also share their stories with us that just made them really question what in the hell is going on.
Coffee. It's the one thing many of us just can't go without. It gives us that much needed nudge in the morning and gets us through those lengthy meetings that, in all honesty, could have been an email. But the coffee featured in today's story is a little different, and it's helping residents of Kalfinia and surrounds to put food on the table.
Now onto our real green shoots, and this one's for all the coffee lovers out there, myself included. Ray, are you a coffee or a tea person?
Oh my gosh, I'm a journalist, and so I think coffee is par for the course when we do the job, hey? So I'm a coffee addict.
Definitely. Now, would you consider a caffeine-free coffee substitute if it was presented to you?
Oh, I'm a bit conflicted on this one, Liz. You know, decaf coffee kind of offends me. But I know with the story that we're going to talk about, you know, the coffee has a bit of good also that's tied to it, hey?
Definitely. So in this instance, there is an alternative out there in the form of the honey. I think it's pronounced mesquite plant. It's a shrub native to Mexico and parts of the US. And unfortunately, these alien plants now cover about 8 million hectares of the Northern Cape. So a plan was needed to eradicate them because they're really taking over. And that's where this tiny town of Kalfinia came in, with the seed pods of these plants now being harvested to produce a coffee substitute. I just love this story. I love it when they find these strange solutions to really big problems.
Indeed, and also this, you know, these beans or this caffeine-free coffee, money is being made from it, and it provides about 700 people in the town with money. And the town, according to the story in Al Jazeera, 36% of adults have a formal employment. So it's a town that is ravaged by unemployment, and people just don't have money in order to survive this very high cost of living. So money through this coffee is being generated, and money is being placed in the hands of about 700 people in the small town. So this is caffeine-free coffee that is doing good. I'm open-minded, willing to try it if it's presented to me. Who knows? Maybe I can be a convert here.
Yeah, look, I've tried one. It uses Turkish figs and Greek acorns and chicory to really bring that coffee taste through, but it has no caffeine. So yeah, it tastes delicious, but you just don't get the shakes, I guess. So it's definitely worth trying.
I just wonder, Liz, with that coffee, could you tell the difference between caffeine-loaded coffee and caffeine-free coffee?
Not in terms of the taste, but definitely if you drink enough coffee in a day, you do realize you kind of get that bit of a rush or that buzz, right? With this, you can definitely feel it's not there. So it's more just a tasty drink because it's tasty. That's the reason you drink it. But it's quite sweet as well. It has a sweeter taste to it because of the Turkish figs. And I know with these honey mesquite plants as well that they also have a very sweet flavor from what I've read. But I also want to go back to just the impact it's had on the community, because you just mentioned that, you know, about 700 residents in Kilfinia are able to now put food on the table. But to put that into perspective, because it sounds like a small number, but yeah, this is a massive achievement, I think, in a town where only about 36% of residents have formal employment. So this can really change lives. It can change the community. And I really hope this project grows and gets bigger and bigger and gets the support it needs.
Indeed. And also, I have a sweet tooth, so I think I'm already sold already.
There we go. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm going to go make myself a fresh cup of coffee straight after this. Ray, as always, this has been so much fun. I hope you have a fantastic week ahead.
Indeed. Take care, Lizana. Awesome.
And that's a wrap. Join us again next week as we unpack more local and international headlines. Until then, give Carte Blanche and Daily Maverick a like and follow on socials.